Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. The particular tradition that I belong to, which I'm very proud, is the Ajahn Chah tradition. So Ajahn Chah died about 25 years ago now. He's left us this old legacy of about 300 monasteries in Thailand and a whole number in the West as well. And he was, Ajahn Chah was a real groundbreaker in many respects. Though his monasteries, his tradition has a very particular flavour to it. And if I were to try to encompass this, the spirit, what's the spirit of the Ajahn Chah tradition compared to other parts of the Thai Forest tradition, say, even then? And he said Ajahn Chah was somebody who found a place for everybody, could include everybody within the Sangha. Everyone could find a place within the monastic setup, or find their relationship to it, find something they can offer, something they can get from it. So previously in the Dhammayut tradition in Thailand, then the monastic tradition very much more of a cloistered one, not a lot of ceremony even, so there would be a meeting of lay people and monastics once a day around the meal time, and a food offering, perhaps an opportunity to hear from or meet with the teacher in a formal way. The Ajahn Chah tradition found a way of involving people very much more. So obviously there's a lot of monasteries there, so a lot of monasteries can involve a lot of people, and there's still this spirit, I think, in the Ajahn Chah tradition. The Ajahn Chah tradition is one in which tries to involve other people. We do this in the West through publications and retreats and so on, having guests in the monastery. The spirit is very much one of trying to get people involved in the running of a monastery, to the point where they would feel it's just as much their monastery as it is the monks and nuns' monastery. So you know, like there's a hierarchy there. So the job of the monks and nuns to try to preserve Dhamma Vinaya, the teaching and the monastic discipline. There's an enormous scope for lay people to be involved in those areas, but also all kinds of others according to their abilities. There's very much a focus there on channeling people's abilities in order to help themselves and to help the whole thing along. All kinds of ways, all kinds of capacities in which one can get involved. It can be a very beautiful thing to do so. I was a bit hesitant, so I tend to try to encourage this. So it's a bit of a regret of mine that I was rather hesitant to get involved. There can be a tremendous power in being part of a group and carried along by a group, particularly if one can find one's niche and find something that one's good at to contribute. if one understands the kind of authority relations, in particular, you know, respect and authority don't go together. So, although there's an encouragement always to respect the robe, and there's a recognition that people wearing it are involved in a difficult training, which the purpose of which sometimes people will understand this, sometimes not, but it's really designed to point the person towards the higher dhammas. So it's really working for the person, and this can be of great benefit to them and to others. So there's raising that up, and yet not putting other things down either. Or to think that somebody, a lay person, can't practice in the same way that a monastic can, particularly if they're living in a monastery. So when you take the 8 precepts when you come to a monastery, then you've got it really. You're kind of already a monk or a nun, even though you're not dressed like one. You've already got all the essential ingredients there. You can feel like you're joining in with the monks and nuns very much. So this is the spirit of it. It's a family in which the child's extended family is out to try to involve people in one way or another, make them welcome them in. Not a cloistered environment where we're trying to keep a cloistered and protective environment. The protection comes from the discipline, which is quite tight in some people's eyes, and yet it offers a very high level of protection. The advantage, particularly in terms of the relationships between the sexes, then there are extremely clear boundaries. And this has meant that there have been no, as yet, thankfully, no scandal within this tradition in the West, no cases of serious sexual misconduct. This, in my eyes, is due to this very clear boundaries, very high standard. And this may impede our more worldly progress in some ways, slows us down, means that we need to arrange a particular kind of contact with each other, and be very careful with it all, which requires investment of time and effort, but to me seems worth it to have something that's clear and that doesn't get into trouble. So better to have a limited thing in my eyes, a limited thing that doesn't get into trouble, than something that's more free rein that ends up getting into trouble. That's maybe my personal tendency, which is why I ordained in this tradition, like this. Maybe it's something that people get a taste for, get to like it after a while, to feel safe with it, to appreciate the timeless nature of it, steadiness of it. Oh, and of course it has its limitations. The convention has its limitations. So, a few reflections.